everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com, the world's bestest, greatest anime podcast that ever, and website that has ever existed. Prove me wrong.
Did you have a lot of sugar before you came here?
Yeah, I did, actually. I did drink half a slushy, so.
that's what I'm going to attribute this to.
And if you have any questions for us, you can contact us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com. And you can also contact us on our cool Discord, where we discuss anime manga stuff.
And important anime boy quizzes. There a lot of really important things are figured out in that Discord. So please join us. And this episode of the podcast, we will be talking about the new anime season. I feel like we watched a good amount, but not an overwhelming amount, which is exactly where I want to be with it. And we have also gotten our whole Otakon stuff together. We've submitted our panels. We've got our hotel. We've got our tickets. We've got our train tickets. We are ready.
The only thing I haven't done, because I don't think that page is open yet. I don't think I've applied to be press yet, because I don't think that's open yet.
Okay, so the one final piece of the puzzle. I hope everybody else is getting prepared for the convention. But before that...
We're already settling to the groove of the Type Moon Minute, so...
You know, last time you called it the Type Moon Moment, which I also like.
I think it was originally Minute, but, you know, I think anybody who's listened to this podcast enough will know my famous... So, point one... Point B, point three, point D. So that doesn't surprise me that I did that last.
We can just call it the TMM, and yes. Then it could be either or yes. Both.
So it's funny because last month I made a big deal that, like, oh man, there's going to be so much information announced at Anime Japan. I'm going to just, this thing might be really long. And then... basically, almost nothing was announced at Anime.
Oh.
Basically, they just had a Fate Grand Order panel, which was my roommate, like, stayed up for it. And it was like, here are two pieces of Fate Grand Order information. See you next year. And man, were people salty because they had two announcements. They said the next event, because they always announce the collab event. And then the next event and maybe some other stuff. So they announced the next event, which actually made a lot of people, especially an unexpected community, very happy. It was going to be set in Vietnam. And the featured servants were going to be the Sarung sisters, who are like kind of like very prominent Vietnamese folk heroes. They're like freedom fighters who fought on elephants. I don't remember if I put them... on my, like, characters I'd like to see in Type Moon in Fate Grand Order. But I definitely remember that they were a very popular choice of, like... and so I know a lot of, like, Vietnamese-American, you know, because those are the people that I can actually see were really happy that, like, you know, Grand Order acknowledged that their country exists and, like, one of their favorite, you know... characters that they had hoped from their country would be in the game was there. So, and there's another character that we're going to get as a free character, which I would know about if we literally recorded this podcast one day later, but they're like keeping it a surprise. And it's probably another Vietnamese character. So a lot of people are speculating who it's going to be. But so that was part that made most people happy. And then they announced the crossover was going to be Fate Learning with Manga, which is just like a gag manga. And like people were expecting like big titles that Fate Grand Order was going to cross over with. So like since there was hardly anything there and like the crossover announcement was like super underwhelming, the salt was super present. And so I didn't think there was going to be that much. I thought it was going to be basically like, all right, those were the two announcements and talk a little about the salt and end of Type Moon Moment.
Aha!
But unfortunately for Kate. Then Typhoon Ace came out, which is like the published when it is Typhoon magazine, and it just had bajillion pieces of information. So they had a bunch of interviews with a lot of interesting information that's just way too like nitty gritty detailed for this podcast. This was like a Typhoon podcast, we could go into it, but since I don't want to kill Kate with, what do you call it, Typhoon minutiae, I'm going to skip a lot of that. I'm only going to hit the big highlights. But they announced Melty Blood was going to have more DLC characters, and they were going to continue to be free DLC characters. So one of them was Powered Seal, who was in the original Melty Blood. She's like a an alternate version of Seal who uses Seventh Holy Scripture. And she was very popular in like the old version of Melty Blood, so people were happy to get her back. And the other one was, it's a Mario! It is not, you know, what do you call it? Nintendo Mario.
Oh, okay. I was like, I never really played this game, but I'm not sure his aesthetic fits in.
No, he's not this papal candidate. Mario Galio Bestino. And the joke is his Mario, because he marionettes people.
Okay.
And he basically...
Man, I really thought it was Mario.
Yeah, no. Sorry, it was just a new character from the remake
game. Then I was like, oh, is it like a sexy Typhoon Mario version of Mario?
I always announce it that way because it's funny. But no, if you played Typhoon Remake, he's a new character to that. So people were excited to see, you know, how he would, since he's a totally new character and wasn't in the old Melty Blood games. People were very curious to see how he plays in this new one. Especially since he hardly fights himself. He like puppets other characters. Because he has like this squad of like nuns and priests that he fights with more than he actually fights himself. He should be an interesting character. They announced a new Fate novel that was coming out. Fate Lost Einharia, which is about the daughter of Brunhilde and Sigurd, who are like fairly established Typhoon characters. So like it's interesting to see, and fairly popular, especially considering Brunhilde's voice actress. And they announced a little about that new novel series that's going to start coming out. And then we got probably the most interesting news, a big 1-2 punch that as I mentioned in the year in review, that we know that the first Witch on a Holy Night movie is going to come out at the end of the year. And it's also going to come out with the Witch on a Holy Night remake of the original visual novel that now has voice acting. And people in Japan were flipping out that Alice is going to be voiced by Hana Kawazawa, who's like apparently she was like the voice actress everybody had hoped if they ever made an anime would be her, and she's apparently super popular. So they were all flipping out that, you know, Alice is going to be voiced by her. And then like the biggest surprise came like late last night, early this morning, that we actually got a tweet from an English Witch on a Holy Night Twitter that the remake of Witch on a Holy Night is going to have Korean subtitles, simplified and classical Chinese subtitles, and English subtitles. So it's the first Type Moon game that's going to come out already with English subtitles.
So none of the other games have ever come out in English?
So...
Or the visual novels?
The Fate Extra games on the PSP were localized by Marvelous, and the Fate Extella games were also marvelized by them. So this is the first one that's just going to come out in Japan already with English. I'm a little, you know, I think we've had this discussion before that sometimes when Japan decides to do the subtitles. But like,
they've done this for a few games and I feel like it's not been as bad.
Because I played that Super, and we know a few people have played the Super Robot Wars ones and they were always legible. Like, I don't know enough Japanese and, you know, I can't like play them side by side to go, this was a good translation. But it wasn't like, having played the Super Robot, the two of the Super Robot Wars games that came out with like that, I never felt like I was, you know, like, what the heck is this sentence trying to say? So they're at least competent. I'm sure that someone with a better grasp of, with a grasp of Japanese, and both copies of the game could tell you how well those actually turned out. But I don't think I've heard anybody super complain about the Super Robot Wars translations. So there is a precedent that they don't have to be horrible.
Yeah, exactly. It's a low bar, but it doesn't have to be bad.
I'm excited. I have the necessary amount of caution. But, I think it's also just nice to see that Type Moon is finally acknowledging that they, you know, have a big fan base. And I think it's also just partially to, you know, hype up Witch on a Holy Night, but I'll take it.
Did they announce what the platform is going to be?
PS4 and the Switch.
Oh, that's good.
I know certain people were very upset that it was going to be no PC version. And, like, there was never going to be an Xbox version because it's Japan.
Does that even exist anymore?
I mean, it's still there because Microsoft keeps trying. But, like, it's definitely, like the least popular of the three in Japan.
I'm sure no one even... Is it even sold there? I'm surprised computer version, though.
Well, apparently... Like, Nasu is super paranoid that the game is going to get, like, super pirated if it's on PC.
I mean, I have news for him.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, people always make fun of it and, like, and you don't think that it's Switch games. And...
But sure, whatever. I feel like I thought the point of them releasing it in these languages was to help prevent piracy. Yeah. I'm just surprised. I mean, I don't know if Steam is a thing in Japan, but like, I was like, oh, I'm surprised it doesn't have a Steam release or something like that. But I don't know what that is like overseas. I don't know. So
they might also just be worried about Steam. Because I know the Fate Extella games, each one, they were released physically and then only like a year and a half later were they ever released on Steam. And part of me wonders if that was like a deliberate part of like the deal or contract. Like, you got to release it physically. I guess later you can put it on Steam.
That wouldn't surprise me. Like, that makes sense that there would be deals like that. So, okay. Well, still, that's pretty cool.
So, yeah, theoretically at the end of the year, I think they said December. So, what do you call it? I'm very much... Like, there's been a fan translation project. Translation project has been, like, stuck in limbo for years. I'm like, how many minutes do you want to bet it's going to be until they announce, we're done with it? Because, like, every time that a Type Moon title has been like fan released. Some like either there was like some announcement of something coming out or somebody leaked something and like only then was like a fire or like some other rival group said that they were going to release a fan translation because the other group wasn't working fast enough.
I mean, it's classic because it happens with manga. It happens all the time. So
they're like, oh, we can't do anything. It's just too much. What? Someone else? You finished that rather quick. I'm just wondering how many like days it's going to be before the Witch on the Holy Night group is like, we're finished. interesting that you finished now that there's an official release announced.
Is that everything?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the rest of it is a lot of like, did you know that Nasu said this about Castoria?
Okay, well, what if you put some of that in the Discord?
Okay.
For those, you know, interested in the minutia. So lure them. We'll lure them to the
Discord.
See?
If you want to know what Nasu said about
I'm sure that they can go find that out, but I think they would like to know what you think about these things as opposed to, like, they can go find information. They can go on Reddit. They know, I think our audience has heard of it.
I see.
But your two cents.
I see.
All right, so, you gotta do the outro. Oh.
See you next time, type lunatics.
Excellent. All right, so now it's time to start talking about the new spring 2022 anime season. And I think I mentioned this in the Discord, but it's like there was a real like return of like there was a lot of sports, which I wasn't expecting. But then there was also just a lot of kind of like original stuff, a lot of just new things that I was really not anticipating a lot of things, I guess. I was like interested, but not like didn't have a strong list.
Yeah, I think my general list for this season was watch Ascendancy of a Bookworm, see what else there is. Also, all I could think is since I've for various reasons been able to listen to podcasts again, all I could think is, boy, how much does Ink as the Taiku podcast bad sports anime commentator, how much work is he going to have to do this season?
Oh, no! They weren't that bad, mostly. We'll get there.
I mean, I don't want to give away too many spoilers by asking Kate that.
I mean, and I don't want to give away too many spoilers by saying there was anything terrible there, but, you know, because I don't want to diminish the terribleness of what Al's going to start with.
I mean, I think we start with the worst and with the best, and I think, like,
there's a mix in between.
Yeah, the mix, like, I think there's not as clear a hierarchy in the middle, but, boy, so
I want to just preface this, that it's my fault that Al watched this show, I feel like.
So yeah, the first two shows I just watched on a whim, I was like, these both look pretty bad, but I'm not like doing anything right now. And like
And it was early, like nothing, not everything was out yet.
So like, I'm like, let me just watch these two. Because like the first one, I was like, Kate almost put this on the list. And then I was like,
I don't know what I was thinking.
So like, the idea isn't that horrible. Like if you like take a like, you know, 1,000-mile view up, it's like, oh, that might be okay. Cause it's this humanity has fallen into like major decline. It's like practically dying out. So like these AIs have decided to help humanity and try to regrow them. So they've established these districts, and each AI determines how they're going to run their district in hopes of like reviving humanity. But for some reason that's not at least adequately explained in the first episode, people aren't allowed to switch out which, like, you know, AI-run domain they're in. So the main girls and wolf dude.
Very important.
Are these, like, couriers that will illegally, like, immigrate you to another domain where you think you would be happier. Which I'm like, seems like, I feel like one of the big reveals is like, does anybody go to another domain where they're happier if all these like inhuman AIs are running them? But maybe this show isn't smart enough. And so like, all right, there could be like some social, almost like Kino's Journey, like commentary on like, you know, like, maybe each one's like a Kino's Journey's world that we get like to see why like someone wouldn't be happy in one of these worlds and why they think they're going to have a happier life in the other one. And so like the show started and I was almost kind of like, they're like the main crew is like at this funeral and they're mourning this one girl. And I'm like, oh, they're already starting with like a major loss. And maybe we'll like see what built up to this. And like these characters are going to be like carrying this tragedy. You know, I think he might have been wrong about this show. There might actually be like some interesting like drama in this. And then like they get to like a checkpoint. And it turns out the girl isn't dead. She's just the girl that they're... She's this bratty, blonde, rich girl that they're transporting. And it just turns into a goof-a-doof chase scene. And you learn one of the girls is a slime girl. Because, like, the AIs have genetically engineered, like, demi-humans for some reason. And so, like, one of them guys is a wolf guy. And one of the girls is a slime girl. So they like to, like, shoot her and, like, have her, like... head explode and she like complains about losing part of her slime body every time. And then it's just kind of this like Yuri Beatty like thing. And at one point, like they're like transferring one of the teachers, because of course most of the girls go to a school. The only one who doesn't go to the school is the wolf guy. So they're transporting like their philosophy teacher, and like at points the main girl is having a philosophical discussion with the philosophy teacher, but it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, hey, if we use the names of philosophers and throw in 1 or 2 points of philosophy, we're a deep show now, right? And I'm like, no, you're not. Fuck you, Establish. Fuck you.
There we go. That's the name of the show.
So yeah, it's just,
and it looked like the animation looked weird. Oh
yeah, janky. It's Polygon Pictures, so you know the minute I say that, you know exactly what that animation looks mm-hmm. like. So yeah, nothing worth there. I just had to share that story of being like fooled into thinking maybe in the first 5 minutes it was a more interesting show than it was. But it was dumb.
So I feel like Al wouldn't have watched this if I hadn't almost put it on the list, but then that's what happened. But I didn't watch it, so one of us came out all right.
And the other show that was like 100 times structurally better, but I think would have put Kate like into a coma, was RPG Real Estate, which is... what if a dragon goes house hunting was even more boring to Kate because it was just a RPG, a real estate company run by Moe girls. Each of them is like some kind of adventuring class that for some reason, so like one of them's a cleric, one of them's a mage, and one of them's a fighter. But for some reason, they can't do like their adventurer jobs. So they're just running a real estate company. The mage girl, like, is like the newest member. And at first they think she's a client. But then they find out she's the new, like, intern. Oh, and there's a dragon girl who's basically just a super dumb Molly. Who, like, is so dumb that, like, the other girl has to bathe her. So, you know.
Oh, thing. Come on.
So, yeah, no. I was like, so not all. It's so weird that the show, like, that's the most blatant fan service. But there's just a lot of, like, creeper shots of them. Because they all have, they're all, like, super flat-chested because they're moe. But they all have, like, these little cleavage outfits that always are, like, just showing what little cleavage they have. And, like, the most, like...
The more you talk about this show, the more you realize that it's worse.
like the plot itself isn't bad. It's like, it's the first, the introduction of all the characters. And then like the super famous busty priestess lady who's like one of the famous heroes is looking for a new house. And the girl who wants to like rise in the church keeps just like showing her the most fancy places. And like, because they don't have any confidence in the new girl. But then she like pays attention to what little things that the big famous adventurer lady says. And so she's able to pick out the good house for her. And they're like, I guess you have some good qualities, new girl. And I guess you're part of the team. The end.
Well, why are those other people even real estate brokers if they don't know how to do that?
Well, because apparently like they have not, like they can't do their adventurer jobs. So they're like kind of stuck.
Yeah, but I mean, if that girl, like, is new and she knew how to do it, then, like, why are the... Anyway, so they suck at their... They also yes. suck at their job.
Yes, that is also the... Yes.
Okay, great. Goodbye. In a totally different vein, we watched... I feel like this is, like, the new psychological thriller show of the season called Tomodachi Game. And... It's about a group of friends. The class basically was saving all this money to go on a class trip and it gets stolen. And we find out that like it's to pay off this debt that someone of the five of them owes. And they get sucked into this debt game where they're $20 million in debt, so it's like they each have $4 million in debt. Although I was like a little, I stopped paying attention because there were like a lot of rules like very quickly. But I didn't understand like why all five of them were now part of the game.
Well, it seemed like there were ways to pay off the debt, but there were also ways of like, you get rid of the debt, but you throw it on one of your other friends.
But, like, is it just because the one friend, like, sold them out to do this?
That's what I the guess? Implication is?
Like, secretly signed them all up for it somehow? I don't know. Anyway, it's this thing where then you have to, like, doubt all your friends. And the only way to win the game is to trust your friends. And everyone will betray everyone and be horrible. And, but the main guy is like, assuming the main guy is not the debtor, which like, I guess that could be a twist, but seems like not.
It would be very bad writing because he seemed surprised by everything. And he's our point of view character. So it would be like shitty Heavy Rain writing where like, oh, I'm the point of view character, but for some reason I've literally hidden my... You know, you see all my other thoughts, but I've hidden the one thought that I'm the debtor from the audience, which would be...
Yeah, that would be bad. I don't think that's where it's going. Although I feel like there was a little bit of like a personality switch on his part near the end. So it could be like, he is too shy. I don't know. Like, because the first game that they have to play is like a super easy, like... or theoretically super easy yes or no game, but like there's all these like secret rules that different people get that can like change the game.
It just seemed like a very overly complex version of the Prisoner's Dilemma. This show really was like, man, I really liked Liar Game. That was a really good manga that sadly never, even, I mean, it got like a amazingly popular J-drama, But I never got an anime, which I was a little perplexed on, considering how like successful the manga was and how successful the J-drama was. I guess they were like, ah, we got our J-drama money. We don't need, what do you call it? We don't need the additional publicity that an anime would give us if we got like the you know, publicity and money that J-drama would give us.
I wonder if it was like the timing of it too, and like it's very, isn't that one like very seinen?
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like all the ones that we get are like very like
shonen
or like, you know, like I feel like maybe it, maybe now it would like, anyway, but.
All I could also think is, I don't want to be too cynical, but since the main character, well, there were technically two main characters, but since the main character was a female protagonist, I wonder how much. Mm. Although there's, what do you call it, a handsome blonde con man who's the other.
Never going to say no to that. But in this series, Tomodachi Game, like, the other thing was, is I didn't feel like they did a good job in the first episode of, like, establishing the characters as, like, actual characters, and like supposedly they're all friends, but I also didn't like really believe in their friendship, so it doesn't really devastate me in any way as they're like doing what they're doing.
Remember how they had like 5 paragraphs of information about each character that flashed on the screen for literally half a second, and you're like, was I supposed to catch that? Was I supposed to just pause and read all that?
Yeah, and like I feel like if you're gonna put people in like this tense situation, I feel like you need to better get me on their side. Like I just don't care. Mm-hmm. Like it's like, I don't know. Like, what do I care what happens to any of these people? Like, and I didn't feel like the writing was very good in terms of their interactions either. So I didn't feel like the whole point of it is to be like, you know, friendship, like, oh my gosh, they're betraying each other. But I'm like, I feel like I understand why they wanted to get to the premise very quickly. But at the same time, it seems like they should have spent most of episode 1 making me believe in these people. And then like right at the end is when they get like contacted by Detective Conan's voice actress. Like, and then, you know, like, they get thrown into the situation right at the end and they don't, like, resolve it. I don't know. Like, I just felt like structurally they didn't really think it through enough. Mm-hmm. So, okay. We swerve right. We swerve left. We're going back the other direction. Ya boy, Kong Ming.
We start with, you know, Zhuge Liang, otherwise known as Kong Ming. Kind of the one of the more famous characters from Romance of the Three Kingdoms. He's supposedly like the genius strategist. You know, when you ever see like a brilliant character with a fan in anime, it is almost certainly a reference to this character. And we see him die on the battlefield, you know, not able to, you know, establish the empire that he worked for as the, the winners of the Romance of the Three Kingdoms, and dying with regrets. Then he wakes up much younger in modern day Tokyo, and at first he thinks that he's been like cast into hell because it's Halloween
in Shibuya, and like it's, yeah, he's like, oh, this makes sense. This is definitely hell. Like, I really love that whole introduction with him. And then, like, some drunk people on the street, like, are like, we love your costume. And then, like, make him drink some really bad alcohol, which he's also like, oh, this is my punishment. It's like, it burns like fire.
And so he goes to they eventually take him to this club, and he sees this one girl who sings the song that he's like entranced by, and through shenanigans they kind of become friends and roommates, and He eventually declares at the end of the episode that he's going to use all his crazy good intellect and strategist powers to make her a musical superstar.
Yeah, she, Aiko is like, you know, kind of aspiring, but it's like she doesn't have the marketing, you know, like she needs like the mind of somebody who can
sell really, her.
Yeah, she doesn't know how to do that part. I also really like that her boss at the bar, like, immediately accepts that he is who he says he is and, like, is a big, like, Three Kingdoms nerd and is like, okay, so now we're just going to talk about, like, strategy and, like, what happened just, like, consistently. Like, I do appreciate that this show doesn't try to explain too much. It's just like, look, just go with it.
He died. He's reborn. He's going to help her become a superstar.
Get on board or like get off the train, you know? Like, and I really also, I liked that Aiko was not an idol. Cause I was sort of like, when I heard the premise, I was sort of like, oh, like, and I know other people like idols and I don't have a problem with other people liking them, but like I don't personally just, this is like doesn't excite me. So I was more excited that she was a singer songwriter and like he like, you know, is like so inspired by like her beautiful voice that he like, that's why he like, he's like, this is the one thing in hell that's like that's good right now. So I like appreciated that.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciated the show a little more than Kate because I listened to that Romance of the Three Kingdoms podcast. So a lot of the like little dumb like Romance of the Three Kingdoms jokes I got, and because it does a lot of them, like as we were somebody else was mentioning, one of the like key stories in Japan of Romance of the Three Kingdoms is Liu Bei, who eventually gets Kongming as his chief strategist. He has to like visit him three times and like basically beg him to be his strategist. And only after the third time he relent and become. And so he makes this thing about like her three, you know, after she appealed to him with her three songs, then he. Because she sings like three different songs various times. She's like, after the third song, now I shall become your strategist.
I see. Yeah, I didn't catch that. I enjoyed him work. I think I almost enjoyed him working at the bar and like more than I. But like that sounds like it's going to be part of it too. But I felt like this was. It wasn't, it's like the opposite of isekai, sort of, or it's like, you know.
The fantasy character being brought to the regular world.
Right, right. Which, like, we've seen before, but like, well, but he's sort of a real guy, right? Yeah. Also, like, it's not, like, he's a totally made-up guy.
So the thing is, not to go into too much detail, but like, yes and no, because there's like the history of the Three Kingdoms, which is a very, like, this battle happened, that battle happened, this battle happened, these people fought, this person died. Book about the history of, you know, Romance of the Three Kingdoms. And then there's Romance of the Three Kingdoms, where people have magical powers and curses.
Well, yes. Like, I didn't mean... I mean, so far, he hasn't... Besides this whole, like, reincarnating, it's not like he... So far, has not exhibited any magical powers, I don't think. So, like...
Because Zhuge Liang, a.k.a. Kong Ming, like, can set up, like, cowish traps so people get enveloped in fog or, like, you know, he definitely has some, like, supernatural shtick in the, you know, Romance of the Three Kingdoms novel. But, it's a little bit to be seen exactly which version they're, you know, drawing on. The actual, like, historical, like, smart guy strategist or the, like, superpowered, super genius from Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
And the answer is probably both. Yeah. But yeah, that, like, you know, like, it wasn't the greatest comedy I've ever seen, but also I was like, this is pretty amusing. So, like, I feel like, and I know this, I think this manga is also licensed. And we've had, I feel like recently there's been, like, a consistent wave of, like, reincarnated from Romance of the Three Kingdoms or Warring States period historical characters into the modern day. Like, I feel like that's there's just, like, a lot of those. So, like, this was a fun take. And I wonder if, like, more people will show up. Mm-hmm. Maybe. It sounds like you might watch more of this one out.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see if Sima Yi, as nobody call it, his, like, chief rival, is gonna be, like, backing some other singer-songwriter.
Another comedy that came out this season was Aharen-san wa Hakarenai. I thought that this show might be sort of a, like, Tanaka-kun is always listless type of show. Because it's about this very tall guy in class who has, like, I wouldn't say he has a scary face, but he just has a very, like, expression, like, almost like a non-expression face. And he really wants to have friends in high school. So he is like, great, I'll make friends with the person, like, sitting directly next to me. Like, this is going to be my, like, attempt. I'm going to do it. And that person is Aharen, who is a very, very tiny girl who speaks so quietly that you can sort of see her mouth moving, but, like, you can't hear her. At first thinks she's, like, snubbing him by not, because he keeps being like, good morning, you know, whatever. And he doesn't hear her replying. And eventually they, like, get through that part. And then she becomes, like, this very, like, overly friendly. So he's like, I don't know. Like, it's like he doesn't know which way is up for a while. And they spend a lot of the episode trying to figure out the best ways to communicate.
I did like your one comment. That was like, at one point they, like, hug in the class. And, like, Kate is like, what show is this that the rest of the class is, like, deadpan not reacting?
Oh, yeah. I'm like, what school show has zero reaction to this happening in a classroom? Like, and, like, the thing about the show is that, like, it's listed as a romance. But, like, I really couldn't tell from this first episode if it's, like, an actual romance, like, where I'm, like, really, like, believing in their love, or, like, it's just a comedy. Like, I don't know. Like, it didn't really fit for me. I mean, I think that's probably maybe clear from my tone about the talking about the show, but, like, I didn't really find it. Like, I thought it would be really funny, and, like, when I describe it, it sounds funny, but, like, it didn't come out that funny to me, like, when I was actually watching it.
The only way I could put it is, like, cutesy pie humor. Like, it very much banks on you finding the girl's, like, shyness and low talking, like, amazingly cute, and then, like, kind of want to see these two characters interact, and that's the best way. Like,
I mean, there were moments for sure. Like, there's a part where she wins a whole bunch of UFO catcher toys, and then he doesn't know what to do with them, so he's, like, sleeping, and they're just, like, sitting around his bed almost like in a seance, which I thought was, like, there were moments, but, like, I agree that, like, it's kind of dependent on, like, you thinking Aharen is cute. And I also, like, I feel like the other thing I think you're supposed to really be into in terms of, like, the romance is that, because we sort of find out that she also, like, she's overly attached to him now because that's her, like, her sort of thing that she does is that she drives people away by being, like, too friendly too quickly, but he doesn't mind. And so, like, I think we're supposed to appreciate her awkwardness, but then it also then results in, like, her and this guy, like, being incredibly intimate. But again, without anyone at school ever reacting, which
there was,
it would never happen.
There was one girl at the very end who seemed, like, upset with this pairing. But it was like, boy, she fucking took her time mentioning, like, bringing that up.
I don't know. I just didn't. Just wasn't my style, I guess. Okay. Great. We're going to go from something else that we didn't like to something else we didn't like. So, but don't worry. This one, Al forgot that he even watched. So
twice.
So we're moving into the, what is very exciting on some levels, the sports anime section of this season, because there are a lot.
Which is the longest.
Yeah. So that's exciting. But the first one we're starting with is Love All Play, which is the latest badminton anime. I do not know what is specifically is going on.
People really loved Hanibara, okay?
Okay, well, they took their time catching up to that then, because that was like a while ago at this point. Also, all the ones that have come out recently are about guys. So, like, I don't know. I don't know what it is, and none of them are good. So, like, just stop making them. I've heard some people like the Salaryman one. I was sort of, like, neutral on the first episode. But
Kate, didn't you also mention that, like, that show very specifically has character designs?
Oh, yeah. When I say people like it, I don't know exactly who those people are and what they want. So, like... Definitely.
But Kate has her suspicions.
I've been at this a long time, everybody. Anyway, so this one, Love All Play, is about a kid who is on his middle school badminton team. And they really just kind of sort of play for fun. They're not really in any sort of like high level of play. But a coach sees him from a high school and sort of sees his potential. So he offers him a sports scholarship to this high school that is like very prestigious. And his sister already goes there. But there's a lot of drama with his family because his dad really doesn't want him to basically go on a sports scholarship because they feel like it's not a long term, basically they're like, if you hurt, get injured or whatever, like you don't have stuff to fall back on. They don't want him like relying on sports. And so his dad has like this past that we sort of learn about and whatnot and like is worried about him. And so his sister is really the one who kind of fights for his like right to, you know, choose this for himself. But in the end, the main character decides that he will go for an academic scholarship and play badminton. So he's sort of satisfied. He's so perfect, you guys. He's satisfying everyone. So he, you know, does that instead. And then, like, the story really is going to start in the second episode because, like,
well, wait, all
this that's, like, when it really starts or whatever. I feel like I would actually really, what I really want, it wasn't bad, is like, but I would watch the show about the sister because she was the really like memorable part, even though Al forgot that too, of that episode. Like she was this great personality. Like she just had the presence and like no one else did.
I was about to say, if anything, when Kate started telling the story, I was like, oh, I do remember the sister, and she was really cool. But yeah, I'm sure that like in 2 days, I'll be like, what? Did I watch that show?
And yeah. And I feel Al is right. Like it didn't really stand out. It is based on a novel, so I might check out a couple more episodes to see if it like really gets going. Because like, since it's based on something that like, and not like a, I don't mean a light novel or anything, yeah, like a regular kind. Like, I feel like those have a fairly good track in my mind of ending up being pretty good. Not always.
Battery.
So I might see if it like figures it out, but it was just very, it just didn't have an, you know, like that real like thing to grab you.
There was nothing objectionable. No. It was just like, it just felt very generic from them. Except for Sister, who was awesome.
Exactly. And like, how much is she going to be in it? I don't think a lot. So like, let's not get our hopes up there. So I have to say of the sports series of the season, I think the one about horse racing is certainly the most unexpected. In Fanfare of Adolescence, we sort of have like a city boy, country boy
dynamic.
Thank you, Al. We have our main character who is currently an idol and he's leaving his group to go to this academy, which have like, I was kind of surprised like how small the class size was. It was like 7 people. Like that's it. I was like, oh, okay. So it's like this very elite, very small school for horse racing. And God, it was boring, you guys.
You know, the problem was it definitely was trying to be like a quirky, wacky show, but it was never quirky enough to be entertaining, but never serious enough that like it was like solid. I think like part of it wanted to kind of be a wacky kind of like Skate the Infinity.
But no, if only.
But no.
I mean, you can't invoke its name because like you're asking for people to be disappointed in you. I also think like the personalities of all the characters were like fine, but like the main character, describe him.
Hardworking former idol.
Like, I just feel like there is nothing to grasp onto there. Like the country boy who shows up, you know, who's like late. And there's like this incident. Oh my God, we forgot the incident where like the electricians were murdered or whatever. Like,
oh, and you also forgot me and somebody else's like weird prediction that the, the electrician guys were going to be horse thieves, but instead they just died.
Yeah, like I don't know what the heck was going on. Like, yeah, they somehow like mess up and there's an explosion and we are never told that they are okay. So I think they died. Scares the horses.
But the problem is the electricians come in and they spend so much time on them that I'm like, oh, they must actually only be pretending to be like, electricians.
We invented a better story.
And they're actually horse thieves.
Or a more dramatic story.
And they're going to try to steal the horses and then City Boy and Country Boy are going to have to team up and save the horses from the evil horse thieves. And then it would have been Skate the Infinity cool, but then it wasn't. They just died.
They died for nothing. So the horses, a few horses get away and the new recruits have to, round them up. But the thing that I thought made me kind of roll my eyes was the Country Boy shows up. And he's able to, like, calm this horse and he, like, you know, helps the idol guy and, like, they save the day or whatever. But he's like, wow, you're so great with horses. Like, you must have so much experience with them. And he's like, I've never ridden a horse ever. And it's like, really? Like, really? That's what that, like, it's not an innate thing that people know how to do. Okay? It's not that easy to do this, and you really want me to just be like, yeah, he just magically knows.
Okay, he just has the will of D and like and knows things.
I just felt like he doesn't have to be like, I don't know. I just don't know why they needed to choose that. It's like he's from the countryside. Like, why couldn't he horses? Like that's where horses are? Like
If the city boy had, like, an amazing connection, that would make more sense.
Well, not like he shouldn't. I just felt like the whole, like, premise of he's never ridden one ever was so come on. Like, why? Anyway. Oh, also there was like the thing some things I did like was there was like sparkly horse spirits or whatever. I assume that that was just a motif and they're not actually like ghost horses or anything, but that was fun. I think this anime has only been made possible by the advent of CG because the horses are all in CG and it would be like really hard for people to animate a lot of horses.
Or maybe the Yakuza. Well, apparently like that Uma Musume, apparently like a bunch of those horses that the bunch of the, you know, the girls are based on actual racehorses, and it turns out a bunch of those horses are owned by Yakuza who are not happy. And, like, that came out.
Oh, boy. Okay. Didn't know that. Also, have never seen that show, but, like, I assume different than this show.
Yes. But I'm just wondering, does this also have Yakuza money in it?
I have no idea. I love horse, you know, like, horse racing, riding, like that sort of, that relationship between human and horse, like, is great. Like, I enjoy that, but I just didn't feel like this show had it. Like,
yeah, it needed, in my opinion, it needed to be crazier and weirder. Like, you had to, like, play up the horse spirits, play up the, like, you know, insanity of all the situation. Or you needed to be more serious and, like, more drama. But, like, this weird middle ground was...
Oh, yeah. I would love, like, a super serious... Like, if it was, like, really, really drama heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have liked that.
Yeah. It had to go either way. But, like, this mixture did not work for me. Because...
Oh, yeah. I want, like, melodramatic 70s shoujo style horse... Yeah, Academy. That sounds
awesome. So yeah, you either need to be
Ride
the Infinity. You either need to be Ride the Infinity or like Glass Mask on Horses. That's one of these two, not this hybrid Milk and Toast middle bullshit.
Couldn't agree more with that. Alright, we go from horse racing to soccer. So Aoashi is the latest soccer anime. I'm trying to think. Yeah, we had one last season, or that was futsal, whatever. Technically different. Al also doesn't remember that one based on the look on his face.
Yeah, I'm like, huh, that is a title that I think I vaguely remember Kate mentioning last season.
So in this one, our main character... starts like late middle school for him, and he's in sort of the finals for his small school. Like it's still a big game for them, but not like, you know, they're small potatoes.
Not soccer quotient.
Right. But he at the last minute, they're like, I think they're about to tie the game up, and the goalie from the other team sort of goads him. And the main character ends up headbutting the guy and getting kicked out of the team, or kicked off the field, and they forfeit the game and they lose in the end. So he's this very, at least seemingly very short-tempered forward who, you know, just couldn't, keep it together for the team, and like everybody's very disappointed. In the stands was a coach, naturally, who was, you know, interested in him and like ends up following him because he's sort of like, you know, he's really disappointed in himself. He has like a family who he really wants to support. His mom like works nights and all this stuff, and his brother's working too to like support the family. So he feels like a lot of pressure. But they're very supportive of him. And the coach ends up like talking to him and like getting to know him a little bit without saying, like, who he was or, like, why he's talking to him. And he starts teaching him how to do this one particular, like, exercise to, like, get better at something. And the kid ends up, like, doing it, practicing all night. And the coach, like, falls asleep. And then he wakes up and the kid's like, I totally got this now. And he's like, whoa, this kid is, like, needs to chill. Like, he's so over the top. And eventually he offers him, like, hey, I want you to join this youth league. So it's not school soccer, which I thought was very interesting. So it's basically like a national Tokyo youth league. And they would be playing on the world stage. So it's not like playing other like high schools and stuff. It's like semi-professional soccer, I guess you could say. So it's like on the world stage. So is like, hey, I want to offer you to like come try out for my team. And his mom is like, no way, like we don't have any money. Like how am I gonna send you to Tokyo? Like they're in a small, you know, small place. And like this, okay, so the other series had like a good sister, and this one has like a good big brother who was like, no, you gotta do this. And like, I saved this money for my part-time job, like for you, and you're gonna take this money and you're gonna go and like try out for this team and like, you know, like find your destiny or whatever. And the main guy also, like, something I like about him was at first, at the beginning of the story, it seems like one of those typical, oh, he needs to do teamwork and like he doesn't know to work in a team and he's like a ball hog and all this stuff. And he's actually not. Like the coach, as he's talking to him and like seeing like he actually has like an incredible sense of like where people are on the field. So like he was it's like people couldn't see that he was strategizing with his teammates. Like, it made it seem like he was just like, oh, always pass the ball to me. But like, that's not really what was going through his head. So like, he had strategy in mind. So I really liked that. Because I feel like that's like the most common trope is like the lone guy who needs to trust his team. But like, that's not this guy's problem at all. So while I didn't think the main character's overall personality really stood out. But I liked that trope wasn't there. The coach is really good. Mm. And the coach has like, oh, he was injured in the past and now he's come back to Japan. You know, I love that. Like, I'm so into that. I liked that this is not, like I said, high school soccer or like the Koshien of soccer, which I don't know what it's called. But like, yeah, it's like, no, this is like almost like World Cup-esque, but like youth league. So I thought that was interesting. The only thing is in the first episode, we haven't met the rest of the team. So I don't know like what the team dynamics are, but this is one I'll be watching at least a couple more episodes to get a feel for that. So like, I felt like of the sports ones that I've seen recently, this was the one that has grabbed my attention a little bit more. So it's probably like, I'm going to say that it's probably the coach's fault the most, but like I liked the setup, so.
Yeah, I wish I'd seen this one. It just felt like I really planned to watch it yesterday and then I fell asleep.
It's fine.
The next one, but.
Oh yeah, wait. What do I have? Oh yes. Okay. So
Kate promised me that this one was gonna be interesting and that she had to save her thoughts
for
the podcast. Okay. So I am just as curious what Kay has to say about this one as you are, audience.
I mean, I don't know if you know this, Al, but this is, like, the internet is really liking this one, too. So, Birdie Wing is, and it's called, like, has, like, some subtitle, like, A Girl's Golf Story or something like that. Whatever. It's kind of, like, it's like Bishoujo one outs for golf. Like,
that's a description.
Like, I feel it's accurate. Like, so
I'm not doubting you, Kate. I'm just taking that description in. By the way, Kate, I just want to mention, this is totally off topic, like has nothing to do with anything, but I will say that every once in a while, your descriptions like linger with me forever because I have still never watched a single episode of Dragon Prince because I only remember your one review of Dragon Prince of being like, it's like a show where someone went, oops, all Ahsoka from Avatar The Last Airbender. And I kind of almost never want to watch the show because I just love just thinking.
All Sokka!
Yes, yes. Oops, all Sokka. That's like, ah, what a great description of a series.
Well, I hope that I'm doing Birdie Wing justice by calling it that. So, I mean, it certainly surprised me. I don't think I was going in expecting to come out with that. Because the main girl is like, you know, she goes around playing golf for against people for money. So she takes these bets. But like the first thing that happens is that she's in a tournament and she's disguised as another person. And she rips off the mask at one point. Like and it's like a whole head. Like it's like, okay, I don't know if anybody else would remember this, but like in Mission Impossible, there's like a super ridiculous scene where like Tom Cruise rips off his mask and it's like he was like John Voight the whole like it, and it's like doesn't make sense because like no mask is like that good, but like that's what happens also in Birdie Wing is like you can't wear a mask that looks like that, like a full mask that anyone would believe is your face, like, but whatever, it's fine. So like, and then she at one point, so that's one part. At one point, she's playing against somebody who is wearing like also a wild disguise, but she hits a ball between two moving train cars to make her shot. Another time, she's playing someone and she hits the ball so that it breaks a branch in a tree and then like goes through to make her shot. And also she's using all of her sports betting money to save the children. Like, there's like a part where like they're taking care of these orphans and also they're being bothered by the police for being immigrants or something. I'm not sure, but she's using her money to save those people. But at the end, like also in the episode, she ends up like playing against these girls who are going to be in this, you know, event. So, like, clearly she's going to be somehow get involved in this golf event. Oh, also, she has, like, a mysterious coach from the past that we hear his voice occasionally. And that voice is Char. So, like, just all ridiculous. And I only assume that it gets more ridiculous. So, Yeah, I feel like...
I have one very important question, Kate. Do you think later on in the series, she's going to play on a golf course that is specifically, all the holes are set up to be cheated on
by... Yes. Oh, absolutely. Because people have already tried to cheat. Like, she has not cheated yet. Oh, also, she only uses, like, three different clubs, and everyone's like, what is going on? And not that I know anything about golf. Oh, and you also don't need to know anything about golf. Very important. And it's also really fast-paced, so it's not, like, actual golf. So much the cheating aspect, although I bet there will be cheating.
Because, like, usually either he's cheating or he's, like, having the other team cheat. But I just remember the one match that everybody talks about where the one team has a stadium where every part of the stadium is set up to be cheating, like to help them cheat.
I feel like it could definitely go there. And then also all the girls are like beautiful. They wear really mostly ridiculous outfits. She doesn't wear a ridiculous outfit. She's pretty like you know, tame. It's like very obvious why everyone's talking about this one. I feel honestly that they do need to push it a little bit even more ridiculous. And I think that they could. Because it's not Skate the Infinity yet. It's not like... But Skate the Infinity wasn't 100%, you know, up to 11 in the first episode. I mean, it was a lot. But like... So I think that this show just needs to believe in itself and go all the way.
So you're just like, when is the female evil shadow prime minister who's also a themed golfer going to appear?
I mean, yeah, we don't have a shadow person yet, but like a rich girl has shown up, and also a girl shows up at the end who's like, I'll play against you. Also, I'm using an extra long club. I don't know why it seems like a big deal in the show, and they make a big deal that it's a big deal. And I was like, sure, whatever. Yeah, I think we can. And they have the outfits. They're ready. They're ready. The show is poised to do it. So just, it's like that thing where like Skate the Infinity was like, I'm just going to be me. Mm. And like, just has to like, not second guess, just do it, you know? And I feel like this show has the potential.
Excellent. I regret not watching this show now. I wish I had not fallen asleep.
I'm definitely going to watch some more of it. And, you know, I have hopes.
I've got high hopes.
Okay, so I think this works. We are going from the most ridiculous to the most serious sports series of the season, which is Dance, Dance, Dancer. And this is the new MAPPA show of the season. That animation is very nice.
Very nice.
And this is about a boy who, when he's a child, he sees this. He's taken to see this performance, and he sees this like amazing man do this modern, very modern dance, and it like inspires him that he wants to be a dancer. And then toxic masculinity ruins everything. And he basically starts doing dance as a child, but quickly sort of gets bullied out of it. Joins the Jeet Kune Do team, joins the soccer team, and tries to sort of like cuts his hair. He just like is like, you know, I'm gonna cut myself off from that, even though it brought so much joy to my life. When he's in school, though, I'm trying to remember if it was like a start of the year or like why, or was it a new year? I don't remember. I don't remember the context of like why they met, you know, for the first time exactly, or like why she saw him.
But yeah, there's this girl who, her mom has a dance studio. And she, you know, makes a big deal out of it and tries to, like, recruit him, right?
Because she sees him do some kick. Like, he's doing, like, these martial arts kicks, but she can tell that he has, like, dance training, basically, when he does them. Or she suspects that he does. So she, like, lures him to the studio. And then the mom is, like, so intense. Like, she's this dance instructor, and she's like, oh, you don't, like, it's like she does like some reverse psychology on him, which is like, whatever, you don't know what you're doing. He's like, yes, I do. And I was like, oh, I thought you didn't care about this. And he's like, I don't, obviously. But he keeps showing up anyway, and he gets kind of roped into to this dance studio. And starts to like reawaken this passion in him. And there's also at the same time some creepy like door in the house where a mysterious boy is like hiding himself away for some reason. But it's like they like are trying to coax him out by being like, hey, there's somebody who maybe is even better than you.
And he is like, what?
So, like, it's very high drama, and there looks like there's going to be, I don't know, like they're going to, you know, there's obviously going to be like a rivalry there. I don't know how the girl character fits into that. Like, I don't know if they're related or like, I'm not sure, but, like, we've got, like,
the Or is she going to disappear like the girl in Slam Dunk?
No, I don't know.
I know, I'm just joking, because she's infamous for, like,
yeah.
being integral in the beginning of that series, and at the end you're like, there was a girl in Slam Dunk?
I mean, as much as people might enjoy that, like, there's definitely some, like, roles that only women are allowed to play, especially here at the beginning, they're talking about some like very classical ballet stories that they're wanting to tell. So there's an upcoming festival, so like, you know, he's basically our main guy's gonna have to make a choice very soon, and like I have a feeling we know what choice he's going to make, but like
I just had recently listened to a podcast about Bruce Lee, because like, the dad who, like, dies of a heart attack halfway through the first episode.
Well, he... I think he died...
Yeah. Well, yeah. He like, died in the past. But we only learned about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He was a stunt coordinator, and he, like, really looked up to, like, Bruce Lee, which makes sense for a lot of reasons, especially if you listen to that podcast on the life of Bruce Lee. But one thing I did also learn from that podcast, which I'm sure will come up later in the series, Bruce Lee also had a lot of dance training and was like a cha-cha champion, and he taught dance classes, and like he was like, there's like a alternate timeline where like he could have been like a dance champion, especially since his father was like a major star in Chinese opera and was also like very famous for his dancing skills on the, you know, Chinese opera stage. So like I'm like 99.9% sure that at some point someone's going to mention that, like, you know, Bruce Lee, who's, you know, the founder of Jeet Kune Do and this like martial arts master, like took a lot of his skill and training from what he learned from dance as well as, you know, his martial arts. So like neither of those things, like what, like learning one does not bar you from using those skills and training and knowledge in the other.
And I think it's what's gonna give this show like the unique, you know what I mean, like this character mm-hmm. is, that's will be his unique edge, you know, mm-hmm. and that will like lend something to it. I think that will like, you know, make his dance stand apart from like other people's and things like that. So I think you're right that that is going to be a particular element that's going to come up again and again. I really like the character designs in this show
are a little weird. The eye glint in them is like, you're like, oh, you're just, that's going to happen all the time, huh? Huh? All right. That's a choice.
It is a little distracting. I think we'll get used to it as the thing. But like in the first episode, I think it really stands out. And like the character designs have this sort of
weird litheness.
Like it's like they have kind of bulgy eyes, like, or like their heads are very, maybe it kind of reminds me of like Miyoko Ano's character designs a little bit, the way that she draws eyes, like eyelids and faces. I don't know. Anyway, it has a unique look to it for sure. And everyone is very long, so that it will really accentuate the dance.
Yeah, that's why I said lithe. That's that, like that's what definitely like stood out to me.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, it seemed like an interesting show that, like, what do you call it? Had some, like, solid drama. And, like you said, like, MAPPA's definitely going all out on, like, the dance animation. I hope they can keep that up. But first episode looked damn fine.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, they were just doing, like, practice, a few practice things in this first episode, it's going to really, you know, when they're really performing, that's when we'll see exactly what we're getting. But I have faith.
But even that, like, one dance number that, like, inspired him was, like, very well.
Oh, yeah. You're right. That was really good. Also, like, we have to find out who that guy is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like this series really is going to be really dramatic. Like, mm-hmm. really dramatic.
I mean, when you have, you know, creepy room kid, there's no way his story isn't dramatic.
Right, exactly. So, really looking forward to this one. I think this is probably, like, a pretty high priority for me for the season. So I'm really looking forward to seeing more.
Not highest priority, though.
I mean, we're almost there. I feel like saving the best for last. A lot of bests here at the end. So, moving out of the sports realm, we are talking about Daimon Recipe for Happiness, which is about a traditional Japanese sweets shop. So, like, how do I put it? Like, not like candy, but like,
kind of like mochis and, you know, everybody watched March Comes Like a Lion. So, you know, like the sweet shops that they own in March Comes Like a Lion. Duh.
And like more, just like more fan, very beautifully crafted. Mm. It's like the kind of, and it takes place in Kyoto, which I feel like you think of as more like having the more like traditional arts and such. So, and we have kind of two rival is not the word I would use, but like basically there are two people that could take over the sweet shop. One of them is a young 10-year-old girl who has been taken in by the family. She was abandoned by her father and her mother has passed away. And so she's been staying with this family and sort of repaying their kindness by working really hard in the shop. And she hopes to take over one day. And then the no good son who left home
to become a filthy musician
shows back up after his father has a health scare and, you know, decides to learn the family business and wants to take over eventually. But he has really no experience with it. And, you know, she really feels like, hey, you didn't care before, you know, so.
And is also just kind of a little worried that, like, this might lead her to being abandoned like she was, you know. Like, the prodigal son has returned. So now, what do you call it? You know, the little orphan girl they took in goes back to the streets.
And at the same time, you know, she's still mourning sort of the loss of her father. And this you can tell that this is like going to be a little bit of like a found family story. And like this guy, the son is, you know, going to become a father figure in her life. And I already could tell from the first episode that the girl's father, who is also a musician, is like the main guy senpai that like he admired, because like I was like, there is no way that this is not the same person. But they don't know it right now. So it wasn't like, even though I said that, I feel like it wasn't like a heavily dramatic show, but it had like an undercurrent of drama, and it had like also beautiful food art.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a very solid kind of like slice of life show. So if that kind of show isn't for you, like the comedy was distinctly there. There were a lot of funny moments, you know, with him, the chestnut head and the such. So
it has a sweetness to it, too, about, like, I can tell, like, that relationship is going to build. I don't feel like it, maybe it's slice of life, but it felt like it had a forward thrust. Mm-hmm. But, like, a gentle feeling to it.
Why did Sweet Mist and Lightning come up recently?
Because that author has a new manga coming out?
Yes, maybe? That was it. Yes, you're correct. I was just, because I just remember recently thinking, I really liked that series. It was very good.
Did you feel like this was similar in vain then?
On a certain level, on a certain level, no. Because, like, that's very much about, like... It's weird, because they're both about family, and they're both about loss and dealing with loss and getting over that. And finding happiness and food. So, like, they're different, but also very similar. But I feel like... This is more about, like, found family and, like, you know, like, coming together after being abandoned or, like, disappointment. Whereas Sweetness Lightning is more about, like, overcoming tragedy. Mm. But, I mean, there are distinct similarities. A father-daughter relationship. It's all about food. It's all about, you know... people who have had some kind of loss. So, yeah. I mean, it's not a bad analogy.
Mm. Yeah, I just... I liked this quite a bit. It is very soft. So, like... Go for the drama for other in other things. I mean, but it does have... I think it has... More to it than it's like. I don't know if it's like pure healing anime. Mm-hmm. I guess is what I mean. Like,
utter fluffican.
I mean, well, you know how I am. Like, it's not usually gonna fly with me.
I mean, I think her, you know, crying about, like, you know, her father being like, children are a waste of time. And yeah, just drag, like, down adults.
It's like, whoa, okay, that was dark.
And then her being like, am I gonna be like, you know, tossed aside by another family?
Yeah, so, like, there's some real issues at play here. I guess we don't know, though, how much is there going to come up in, like, every episode. Mm. But, like, anyway, I think it's definitely worth pursuing this one, so. Also, delicious-looking sweets. I mean, we didn't see a lot of them making them, but it was still there. Oh, I forgot that the main guy cries because he loves the sweets so much. Mm. I forgot that part. They can't let them go.
Or that those nasty guys like prank order.
Yeah. Like, what? Who does that? Don't waste food. So, it's about hard work and coming together. All right. Now, so this is a found dad and daughter story. And it was really good. But the best found dad-daughter story is obviously in Spy Family.
I almost feel like, I wonder if, I mean, we're going to just gush about the show. But I feel like, I wonder if this is the show that everyone is like, hey, yeah, you're right, Spy Family. It's like trying to tell people, you know what's this cool show I just found out about? It's called Demon Slayer. Nobody's really heard about it, but... If you're willing to give an obscure show a chance, you just might like it.
Look, sometimes everyone's right and we just have to, like, admit it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just feel like of everything we watched, just Spy Family just stood out. It was like...
Just because it came up just before we started the podcast, they recently had, like, this Shueisha and Hololive... like crossover thing where they had a bunch of the VTubers like talk about like their three favorite recent manga, and Spy Family was the number one most picked manga that, like, you know, it beat like all the other ones by a decent margin.
And I haven't read the manga, but I'm kind of disappointed in myself after I watched the first episode. Like, why am I not reading this? So for those of you who aren't also reading it, I don't feel like all of our audience is like big Shonen Jump readers necessarily. So, like, I'm not saying they haven't heard of Spy Family. But, like, they might have been like me where it's like, yeah, I've heard that name, but, like, I haven't bothered to, like, find out what that is. So we have the greatest spy, Twilight. And he's sent on a new mission where he must infiltrate this school because he has to gain a relationship with this other guy.
Who's, like, super reclusive, and the only time he really, like, comes out in public is to, like, see his kids' like performances or like any kind of like school function. And that's the only time he actually like steps out of whatever his secretive job normally is.
So Twilight is sent on a mission and he must find a family in order to get one. And like, it's like a long term. This is a long term project because he's got to get a child into the school. And then they got to make friends, and then they, you know, so it's like a deep cover operation. Mm-hmm. That's like the phrase I was going for. So he finds the shadiest orphanage that he can, and it very easily can take any child that he wants, which, like, this is mostly a comedy, guys, but, like, yes, I understand that that's disturbing. and he... the horrible orphanage master is like, oh, I know Jess, just a girl for you. She's a creep and everyone hates her, basically. I'd really love to get rid of her. And that's Anya, who turns out to be a telepath. So when Twilight is there, he's like, oh, she has to be, you know, I need a kid that's this age that can do this or whatever so she can read his mind. And so she's able to, like,
give him the answers he wants.
Exactly. And so over the course of the first episode, they're like getting to know each other. Anya ends up messing with some spy equipment and maybe leading some evil spies to their home. Twilight has to save her. And by the end of the episode, Twilight no longer sees Anya just as like a random child that he is found to do this mission. He actually cares and he has feelings and they become a family.
But he still doesn't know that she has telepathic powers.
Right. So, but he's like, okay, but somehow we're going to like make this work. And he's like, I will protect something. And he has like something to care about. And both Twilight or Lloyd, that's his fake name. Lloyd Forger. So when he signs anything, he writes Forger on it, which is great. This
I'm Chuck Suspicioso.
But they just feel like they have great personalities. They have great chemistry, comedic timing.
Anya makes some great faces.
Oh man, yeah, and like. The fact that, you know, nobody knows that she can read minds. So, like, Lloyd is, like, lying. And she's like, yeah, okay. And, like, she's like, he's such a liar. And, like, he thinks, you know, he's being, like, super clever. All this, you know, like. And, like, also, but at the same time, it's, like, really, really funny. But it's also, like, very sweet, I think. Like, I mean, I'm such a sucker for this type of, like, relationship. But yeah, they're just like great together. I'm really looking forward to them introducing some of the other characters because I know right at the end, he's like, she passes the test. Oh, I love when she passes the test for this school where she's like, he's made her study and she like really didn't want to because she has like trauma. But she was like, I could just cheat off all the other kids and all the other kids are dumb and don't know any of the answers. So she's like, ah, like, I guess I have to do this myself. But at the end, like, she's, like, admitted, like, she passes the test, but then part of the admittance is, like, a family interview. And they're like, you must bring your spouse, like, no exceptions. And I was, like, saying, like, so now he has to find, like, a fake wife for this. And obviously that becomes another main character here. But I was like, what if they're a widower? Like, what are the rules here? Like, just like so well done. I don't know, just like it felt fresh.
I have a question, Kate. The most important question. Did it feel more Jump or Sunday to you?
Interesting. I mean, it definitely didn't necessarily feel like, I don't know, like Shonen Jump. Good, but I don't think it runs in Jump. Like, I don't think it runs in, like, Weekly Jump.
Yeah.
I think it runs in something else.
Okay. That's why I felt a little, because it didn't feel fully Sunday to me, but it didn't feel fully Jump to me either.
Maybe it lives in that in-between space.
Because you know how I love me some Shonen Sunday.
I know you do. It definitely, I mean, I also feel like the characters being the ages that they are, like, Lloyd is an adult man, like, presumably his wife from the pictures we've seen is, like, an adult woman, and then, like, Anya's, like, a four-year-old, so, like, there's also not that, you know, like, teen, tween, like...
Although I think Jump's been experimenting a little more, because my probable next manga of the month is, what do you call it, Sakamoto Days, which is about, like, a retired assassin, and so he's...
And one of the most popular series in there for a long time was Kochikami, which, like, is not about young people, so, like...
But he has two teenagers who work in the convenience store where they are.
Is that running in Weekly Shonen Jump?
Yes.
Okay. It's not like it never happens, right?
Yeah.
Like, Kenshin, you know, he's technically an adult. Oh, I forgot that Kanshiro is an absolute high schooler. The Joestar family, all definitely 100% not 25-year-olds.
25-year-olds plus.
I just thought of that too because, like, Fist of the North Star manga is coming out from Viz now, like, officially in English. I've been buying that. And, like, yeah, you're just like, right. Yes.
Or it also reminds me, like, I think the guy in Votoms is supposed to be, like, 18 or 19.
What? Is that in Jump? No.
No, it's not in Jump, but it just reminds me of one of those, like, all right, whatever age you want to call them.
Yeah. But I guess I feel like that's interesting about Sakamoto Days, too. But, like, I guess when you picture what Weekly Shonen Jump is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Even though, like, Goku is technically an adult, right? Like,
that is a severe quotes, Kate.
Yeah, I said technically. But yeah, I guess, yeah, it's not necessarily what you would picture initially. I feel like there was nothing to dislike about this show and only things to absolutely love about it. Like, it was just, it was so funny. It had, like, this undercurrent of heart. It has spies, which I love. Lloyd is very handsome, which I also love. So, like...
Dun.
Like, what's there to complain about here? I guess the only thing to complain about is that, like, this is a very popular, currently running manga. So, like, we're not going to get, like, wherever this story is going, it's going to be, like... To be continued.
True. But I feel like at this point, that's just something you have to... Also, I feel like, especially a popular Jump show like that, you just wait a season or two and there'll be another season. Especially since I think the only other show that I've seen as much anticipation for is Chainsaw Man coming out of Jump. I'm fairly certain, unless, like, they, like, totally screw the pooch with later episodes, that this wouldn't get a continuation.
Yeah, and I feel like there have been a few more Jump series where, even if they've... I'm thinking, like, Dr. Stone, right? Mm-hmm. Where, like, it was long-ish, but not wildly long. Mm-hmm. And then they also are finishing it in anime. Like, it's like, okay, like... it could be in that, maybe in that realm, which had a long, like a good run.
Yeah. I look forward to at least two more seasons of Dr. Stone.
Exactly.
To enjoy.
And, you know, much as you joked about it, like, sometimes the popular things are really good, and I'm not going to pretend that they aren't just because they're popular. Demon Slayer is really good. Spy Family is really good. Just because it's going to be the most popular show of the season doesn't mean it can't be my favorite also. So, like, absolutely. There's, like, no, I don't feel like it does. I feel like it appeals to everyone, too. Mm. Like, there's no one on listening to this podcast where I'd be like, well, you wouldn't enjoy this. Like, I feel like what's there not to, like here?
Mm-hmm. Plus, it's not in, like, a over, like Shonen Fighting may have been burned out on, but like, you know, the family drama about spies.
Comedy. It's a family comedy. It's
family comedy about spies, you know. That's like the ninth one I've seen this year.
Right. Exactly. It's like, and I feel like you're not, it's almost like you're never burnt out on comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you always need like a good one.
You might be burnt out on jokes in a bad comedy. Like, oh, you guys only, you have an interesting premise, but you only have three jokes.
Yeah. And I didn't feel like, you know, this is going to get stale. Like, it felt like it's got lots of, and it did have a little bit of action. So, like.
Also, randomly, all I could think is, man, I really wish they had made another season of Hinamatsuri. I really like that series. That's, once again, that's a weird family with, you know, comedy. And
I feel like we always need more of those. So we will end this review of the new season with Spy Family, which we will recommend to everyone. We will, of course, be watching. And for the next month, we will be talking about some of the winter 2022 shows that we finished up. And maybe even some older shows that we finally finished as well. Just whatever we can fit in. But I'm really looking forward to talking about a few things that recently finished up. So I think that'll be great for May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a few shows that I just would like to, you know, kind of put end caps on. Especially, you know, I feel like every once in a while we're like, all right, I'm going to tell you what I think about that show if I watch all of it. So I feel like that'll be fun to do.
See everybody next month.